Heads up, fans of the world. We're putting a little something extra in your feed. Things That Go Boom, a bonus podcast to loyal listeners of the world from PRX. This show goes deep inside the crazy reality we don't like to think about. We already live in a world of nuclear weapons, and there's a whole crop of countries just itching to join this dangerous club. Host Lacey Healy and her team explore why we don't worry much about nuclear war anymore, and why maybe we should. By going inside the Iran nuclear deal, secret missions, burial plots, a crying JAG, and even a false alarm about Armageddon. Things That Go Boom. Let's roll.
In the middle of DC, there's this sprawling estate. Big brick mansion, Japanese garden, a rare collection of Fabergé eggs.
Okay, so you're at Hillwood Estate Museum, and here you can actually peek down and see the Washington Monument. So.
The former lady of the house, Marjorie Meriwether Post, owned General Foods.
So she was a great philanthropist.
She was also a famous hostess, known for super formal table settings. And she had another home in Florida. You might have heard of it. It's called Mar-a-Lago. But we're not here for any of that.
So the space we're in now, if you look all the way up, there's a great shower up ahead, right?
Nice.
And then
watch that radiation
a really, really loud bell, right?
We're taking the stairs down to a cinder block basement, past a big red bell and a decontamination shower, as in the kind you use to wash off the dust and debris of a nuclear attack, to Marjorie's fallout shelter. Because in 2018, President Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal. And we want to know, did that decision make us safer? Or should we all be building these things in our backyard?
The Iran deal is defective at its core. If we do nothing, we know exactly what will happen.
This deal demonstrates that American diplomacy can bring about real and meaningful change.
Really stupid leaders, stupidity is just shocking. It's one of the dumbest deals I've ever seen.
I'm Lacey Healy. I work in nuclear policy, and I used to think I knew how to prevent a nuclear war. Now, I'm not so sure. When I started thinking about doing a podcast on the Iran nuclear deal, I didn't expect to end up in an old fallout shelter. And it definitely never occurred to me.
The walls originally pink. They were.
That's
we did a paint
cancer.
Chip sample.
That it would be pink.
Think pink. Think pink when you shop for summer clothes.
Marjorie Post was a big fan of pink.
Hillwood's fallout shelters aren't open to the public. But Estella Chung, the director of collections, agreed to show us around.
Mamie Eisenhower started off this craze for pink. There was a color called Mamie Pink that was sort of launched by the color that she would wear, and they were actually quite good friends.
Now, I wouldn't presume to tell a woman what a woman ought to think, but tell her if she's got to think. Think pink.
Let us face, without panic, the reality of our times. The fact that atom bombs may someday be dropped on our cities.
Estella told us that back in 1961, Marjorie Meriwether Post built no less than 4 fallout shelters on the property of Hillwood Estate. It was just after the Bay of Pigs, and Kennedy had issued a call to Americans in the pages of Life magazine to do what they could to prepare for a nuclear attack.
The blast of an atom bomb is its most important destructive agent.
Marjorie took the call seriously, and she prepared to house not just her family, but her entire staff, no fewer than 60 people.
Set aside a small supply of canned goods. They're safe from radioactivity.
Beyond the pink paint, the shelter is outfitted with everything Post might have needed to wait out a blast. I noticed the pantry first.
Canned salmon and spam and green beans and cans.
Then the military-issue cots in the corner.
Head, foot, head, foot.
So cool.
Medical supplies on the shelf.
First aid kit and learn how to stop bleeding.
An instruction manual that, among other things, says to take aspirin for radiation sickness.
Yes. The knowledge is ours, and preparation can mean survival for you. So act now. Someday your life may depend on it.
And then last but not least is how to deliver a baby in a fallout shelter using the items in the kit.
Oh, wow.
I caught Estella's glance as she jumped to that last page in the manual. It was a look that said, "That's you, lady." At the time of our tour, I was just about 9 months along. My son was born the next week. So there was no denying that in the event of a nuclear attack, I'd have been the one to deliver my baby on that cold, hard concrete floor. There was a time when I'd have told you flat out that Trump made a horrible mistake when he pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal. I'd have told you that the deal was the only way to prevent an Iranian nuclear weapon. I'd have told you that without the deal, we'd be steps away from war. But in the months since Trump pulled out, in the time I've spent digging deeper into this agreement, and not just what it is or was, but how it came to be, I've come to realize that there's a whole other piece to this puzzle I missed, and it's bigger than any one deal. This season of Things That Go Boom is called Fallout, and we're going to talk about the system that keeps us safe. We'll ask if we're on the right path, because as it turns out, foreign policy swims in the same swamp as everyone else, and there is no such thing as a perfect deal.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, we're good to go. My name's Ron Hubbard. I'm the owner and president of Atlas Survival Shelters.
Shelters might sound like a relic of the past, so we were a little surprised to find out that, actually, the fallout shelter business is booming. Just ask Ron.
And there's a famous Ron Hubbard. Do you get that a lot?
No, I'm no relation, but yeah, I get that every day.
So yeah, we're not here to talk to Ron about Scientology. We're also not here to talk to him about his political beliefs, though a few might creep in. We reached out to Ron because he's one of the most prominent manufacturers of fallout shelters today.
How'd I get in the bomb shelters? Well, my career as a supermodel wasn't going so well.
Ron's tall, tan, has sort of a guy next door vibe. So it's all the more surprising when he talks about his line of work. He got his start about 8 years ago.
The shelter that we make today is basically just a derivative and a copy of the shelter that was designed back in the early 60s and late 50s.
Ron says he sold a shelter a month when he started out in 2011, then one a week. Now, he sells about one a day. In addition to shelters, Ron's something of a survival gear aficionado. He has his own YouTube channel where he hands down tips on hoarding for doomsday.
Hey, everybody! My name's Billy Bombproof, and I'm here to tell you about the new Billy Bombproof channel.
I am literally doing this podcast from my my cash room, which is where I cache all my survival supplies.
Guns, axes, backpacks, tents.
Survival food, water purification systems, stoves, ovens, knives, bows and arrows, slingshots.
Product and get a laugh or two. So tune in to...
But it's not just doomsday preppers like Ron buying these things. A lot of his clients are in Japan, Saudi Arabia, places where the threat of a nuclear attack still feels as visceral as it did to the U.S. in the 60s. Because, at least in those cases, it's right next door. In the U.S. today, the threat of nuclear weapons can get lost in what seems like a constant barrage of threats, big and small. That is, until there's an incident.
This just into CNN. It's the moment many people in Hawaii found out about the inbound missile that turned out to be a false alarm.
Moments ago, a false alert went out by a text message in social media which warned the people of Hawaii to...
Yes, after the Hawaiian scare, the amount of business in Hawaii went through the roof. I got maybe 200 emails within the 5 days from Hawaii that people were really scared, and they should be scared.
Hi, Mom.
Hi.
My parents live in Hawaii, so they were there during the scare, which, if you remember, came right on the heels of months of fire and fury-filled tension between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, some people put their children down in sewer drains.
Given how real the threat of a nuclear attack was at the time, my parents' reaction threw me off completely. So I sat down with my mom to ask her about one thing in particular that stuck with me.
What you didn't call me, for one thing.
Nor your sister.
Which I'm a little offended.
So I thought about both of you, both my daughters, about calling. But I thought you only have 15 minutes. So which is your favorite? So I didn't call anybody.
But she didn't just not call me. She actually spent her last 15 minutes on Earth on Facebook, asking other folks if the whole thing was real. And, of course, she woke up my dad to tell him the news.
Do you, like, say something to each other? Are you, like, bye?
Well, I don't even want to tell you what he said.
I might not want to
you
know.
You can bleep it out, I guess. He came in there and he was completely naked and he said, "Here, kiss my ass goodbye." And that was kind of it, but I didn't kiss it.
I asked my mom how she could just sit there, waiting for the bomb. But she said, where was I supposed to go?
You can turn it into a party room. You can turn it into your hobby and craft room.
One of Ron's most popular designs doubles as a wine cellar.
Where the stairs are actually hidden underneath the kitchen counter.
But some of his custom builds feel more like lavish retreats. He built one with a swimming pool and a bowling alley. And after California's deadly wildfire season last year, he started offering a fire shelter. He also builds a model for just $9,000. Ron says it's not much more than a prison cell with a toilet and a bed, but it's something. He says he wants to be the Henry Ford of fallout shelters, make them accessible for all.
It may not be a luxury yacht, okay? It may be a canoe, you know, but a canoe and a yacht, what they have in common, they both float and they both keep you from drowning.
Ron told us he doesn't like to get his nose in other people's business, so he doesn't ask why people are buying these things. But he's pretty sure something is coming to a head. He calls it the inevitable end of the world as we know it. And in his view, it's all tied up with how divided our country's become.
People might be listening, oh, that's freaking crazy. There will never be a war. Well, tell that to the people of Germany during World War II. The whole country was devastated. You never know what's going to start a war, but this country is so divided.
Apparently, sales took a dip last year after tensions settled and Trump met with Kim Jong-un. Ron says people felt safer.
There's no country in the world in the right mind would mess with Trump right now because they know that he would bomb them. Nobody wants to mess with that man because they know they're going to lose. Obama got pushed around like a punk kid.
But Trump's own intelligence folks say North Korea is unlikely to give up its nuclear stockpile. And to make matters worse, some nuclear experts say that today, the threat of a global meltdown is the worst it's been since the darkest, most dangerous days of the Cold War.
You know, nuclear weapons may be 70 years old, but they're going to continue to pose risks until they're abolished, whenever that might be.
When we come back, we'll talk to one of those experts. There's this thing called the doomsday clock, kept by the bulletin of the atomic scientists. The whole thing sounds like something out of Dr. Strangelove, but it was originally created by a group of scientists involved in the Manhattan Project, the program responsible for the first nuclear bomb. Those scientists produced a journal of developments in nuclear weaponry, and the clock, with its ominous hands marching closer to midnight, was on the first cover. Ever since, the folks behind the bulletin have moved the clock's hands back and forth to symbolize how close we are to global meltdown. In 1991, it was 17 minutes to midnight. But over the last few years, the big hand has been creeping closer and closer to doom, partly because of what experts there call the new age of nuclear instability. Right now, it's 2 minutes to midnight. The last time the clock was this close to catastrophe was 1953, when the Soviet Union tested its first hydrogen bomb. Announcement that Russia has created an atomic
explosion sends reports. In those days, the risk was a catastrophic nuclear war between two superpowers. In our time, the risk is that nuclear weapons will spread to more and more countries, particularly in the Middle East, the most volatile region in our world.
Sure, we're not so worried about the Soviet Union anymore. But today, there's a whole host of other new scary threats to add to the mix. Things like cyber war, misinformation, and nuclear terrorism. Plus the possibility of regional war and maybe even an old school war between superpowers. That's still a thing. And on top of it all, we're still just as likely to suffer a nuclear accident as we were back then.
I'm Sharon Squassoni, and I'm a research professor at the Institute for International Science and Technology Policy at George Washington University.
Sharon spent almost a decade in the executive branch. Her last position was at the State Department. And she's one of the folks who decides how close the clock is to midnight.
Right. So 2 minutes to midnight, I tell my children that nothing good happens after midnight.
Today, most of us barely think about the threat of nuclear weapons. It just doesn't seem real.
It's almost like the frog getting boiled in the pot of water. It happens kind of on a day-to-day basis, and you become accustomed to these developments. Well, we're saying, you know, this isn't a new normal. It's a new abnormal, and everyone should be paying attention.
The truth is, I didn't go into nuclear security because I was scared. I did it because it was exciting. I started as a research assistant in Washington in 2007. George W. Bush was president. We were in the middle of two wars, and Iran's nuclear program looked super suspicious.
Does that include the possibility of a nuclear strike? Is that something that your administration will plan for?
All options are on the table. We want to solve this issue diplomatically, and we're working hard to do so. The best way to do so is therefore to be a united effort with countries who recognize the danger of Iran having a nuclear weapon.
The U.S. started suspecting Iran might be building a nuclear bomb back in the 70s. And Iran's program had just gotten stronger since then. It was so bad that I used to joke that working on Iran was job security, because that was one problem that was never getting solved. Then, in comes Obama with a new approach. And a few years later, I'm proven wrong.
Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate.
In exchange for sanctions relief, Iran agrees to roll back its nuclear program to a point where the U.S. and its allies feel a little more comfortable with its existence. Iran gets rid of 98% of its enriched uranium and most of its equipment. And it gives inspectors more access to prove it's all on the up and up. I was all in.
This deal demonstrates that American diplomacy can bring about real and meaningful change. Change that makes our country and the world safer and more secure.
It seemed like the impossible had been achieved. The deal doesn't address Iran's ballistic missile program or its nasty little habit of funding terror groups like Hezbollah. But as far as I'm concerned, the big scary nuclear elephant has left the room. And that's what really matters. Not everyone agrees.
The American people have spoken, and the American people have elected their new champion.
The Iran deal is defective at its core.
In May of 2018, President Trump made good on his campaign promises and pulled the U.S. out of the deal, citing, among other things, Iran's non-nuclear exploits.
In a few moments, I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime.
The move put us all into a holding pattern. We still don't really know what the consequences will be. There are some obvious possibilities. One is that Iran could start its nuclear weapons program back up, meaning that in short work, they'll have a weapon that could kick off a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. Or alternatively, we could go to war to stop them. So think about that for a minute. Because there is some good reason to believe that at some point in the near future, we'll be looking at a choice between an Iranian bomb and bombing Iran. Here's Sharon Squassoni again.
I really have to hand it to the other parties to the agreement. You know, it would be easy for the U.S. to pull out and all the other parties to freak out. You know, Iran could have said, okay, we're done with this deal. We're out of here. But Iran didn't do that.
She says she's not necessarily knocking Trump's willingness to upset the apple cart, like his meetings with Kim Jong-un. But she's not exactly pleased with the way he pulled out of the Iran deal.
You know, it's in a lot of ways really irresponsible to go out there, simply break all the pottery, and then, you know, when you need your morning coffee the next day, you're looking around and it's like, oh, I guess I'll pour this coffee straight into my mouth.
She's taking a wait-and-see approach to the fallout, as it were. But she worries about the consequences to the United States if Europe and Iran are able to keep the deal alive.
I do think, however, that Trump and his administration, his senior officials, underestimated the value of the Iran nuclear deal to the other parties and their willingness to keep the flame alive.
The deal was negotiated with a whole slew of other partners, after all. Folks like China, Russia, France, the UK, and Germany. The US was a key ally in this particular deal, but going forward, our friends might just decide it's easier to go it alone.
And in essence, if they are able to make a go of this Iran deal without the United States, it will render the US irrelevant.
So, is our foreign policy making us safer or less relevant? This season, we'll dig into the backroom negotiations and political ploys that make and break deals like the one we made with Iran. You'll hear from decision makers and diplomats on both sides, and we'll talk about the deal. But we'll also talk about America's shady history, foreign ties, and special interests, all of which existed long before President Trump. And we'll ask if our foreign policy is doing its job, because if the system is broken, and it very well may be, then we have to ask, what's even the value of cutting these deals? And maybe more to the point, what's stopping us from nuclear war? Next time on Things That Go Boom, Trump kills the deal.
America will not be held hostage to nuclear blackmail.
He wants to have a deal that addresses everything.
The Middle East does not look good through rose-colored glasses.
When I make promises, I keep them.
Things That Go Boom is a production of PRI, PRX, and Inkstick Media. For more information and behind-the-scenes action, follow us on social at Inkstick Media or visit inkstickmedia.com. Our show is produced by Ruth Morris. Catherine Fink is our assistant producer, and Mary Beth Kirshner is our story whisperer. Darian Shulman composes our music, and our engineer is Robin Wise. A huge thank you to John Barth, Melinda Ward, Kelsey Davenport, and Alex Bell, and also to the Hillwood Estate Museum and Gardens. Thanks also to the Carnegie Corporation of New York, Plowshares Fund, and N Square for making our show possible. Like, what is your perception now of what you're supposed to do if there's a nuclear attack?
I don't really know. So if I get a do-over, I'll call.
From PRX.
If you liked this episode, you are going to love the rest of the season of Things That Go Boom. If you want to hear the whole season, you can subscribe everywhere you get your podcasts.